Gosh. Hi, everybody. I'm Chloe, and I'm a real alcoholic. thanks so much for the opportunity to come up here and share my story with you guys. It was a nice drive, and we had a nice chat on the way here. Thank you for loaning me your shawl, too. Just before we got here, we were talking about, I forget how we got on this subject, but we were talking about how many hours it took to get, you know, really good at something, and you said it was 10,000. I don't know where that came from, but Philip says it's 10,000. So I consider this to be 996 hours away from getting really good at hopefully someday. Anyway, I'm sort of new at this whole speaking thing. So it's nice to have an opportunity. What's different is that something like this really would have paralyzed me, you know, in the past, and I just would not have, you know, I would have just fled in fear. So anyway, I wish I could sing my story to you, because I think it would be a little bit easier. Philip and I play in a band together, and, you know, that is something nice that has come out of, you know, getting sober, being able to play music again, because I certainly was not able to do that for a long time at the end. So anyway, let's see. My sobriety date is January 29th, 2007. I have a sponsor. She just had a baby, who's very handsome, by the way. January 29th, 2007. I have a sponsor, and I have a home group, which meets on Wednesday nights. I have had the privilege of sponsoring a couple of women, and am taking someone through the book right now. So this is just all new stuff for me. The first time I spoke, my husband was in the audience, and he just kept going like this in the back, and it suddenly occurred to me, like 20 minutes into my tour, that I hadn't even talked about alcohol at all, or alcoholism. I was just like giving you an autobiography or something. After that I spoke again, and it's, you know, spent a little too much time, I think, on history. So hopefully I'm learning. Once upon a time I was born. And you know, I grew up in the 60s. So I was around a lot of, I was right up in the middle of the 60s movement. And so it was very commonplace for me to see people drinking and a lot of drug activity and marching in peace walks and being taken out by my parents because, you know, the police were coming so I have three brothers and sisters. We're all very close in age. I'm the second to the oldest. I'm the only one of us that has this thing called alcoholism. Although both of my mother's parents were alcoholic, my grandmother died with 26 years of recovery and helped a lot of women. So I think that I was born with this because I, as far back as I can remember, I just felt different. I mean, as far back as I can remember, my mom tells me that she had a really hard time giving me you know, getting me to drink milk, and nothing was working. I mean, so, you know, I was joking with her a couple of years ago and just told her that perhaps she needed to put some alcohol in that bottle. That's what I needed. But I can just always remember, I can remember being so angry. All my brothers and sisters are within a five-year span. So, you know, at age 20, my mom had, you know, by 25, she had all four of us. And I can remember just fighting for attention my whole entire life. And so here now, hopefully, I have your attention. And I don't really, I'm not familiar with this. And it's, you know, it's, I'm a little uncomfortable. But anyway, back to that, I just can remember just being really, really pissed off, you know. All throughout my childhood, just never feeling like I, you know, just had enough, or just wanting more attention, and just, you know, feeling different. Lots of very early memories of, you know, in school, of just feeling different than everybody else. Not feeling like I fit in, finding, just hanging around, out with people that were like me at a very, that my parents were hanging around. And my parents don't have this disease either. I mean, they're just kind of caught up in the 60s too, and they're very well-grounded people, and have, you know, given me many gifts that I've really come to recognize in sobriety. But just, you know, one of the earliest memories I have is just like being in like kindergarten or first grade, maybe second, and kids just, you know, I grew up in New York, so, you know, there are a lot of Puerto Ricans and, you know, Italians. And so I just really felt like something was wrong with me because I wasn't, you know, Puerto Rican. I can remember a kid saying, "What are you? You know, what are you? What are you?" And I don't know, you know, I'm English, Irish, and Italian, but I can remember just recoiling, you know. I'm an alcoholic, that's what I am. Didn't know it at the time. But I think, you know, I've had this disease even before I ever picked up, you know, a drink. I do. So I spent a lot of time hanging around with, you know, my best friend, and whose parents, her father is now dead from alcoholism, and just hanging out, spending a lot of time away from home, or if people were in my home, they were going to be, you know, like I was. I was really ashamed. You know, I can remember things like just always wanting to be, you know, the only one, all the attention. I can remember getting really angry at my friend because she got another friend. And that just wasn't okay with me. And I can remember just going in her, she was out of town, and I can remember just going in her house and, like, taking everything out of her drawers and just throwing it all over the floor. I was so mad. I can remember, you know, we didn't go to church as I was growing up. My parents are much more into Middle Eastern sorts of schools of thought. And so I didn't spend a lot of time in church. And that was another thing that disconnected me from everybody else. You know, I thought something's wrong with me because I don't do what you do. But I can remember going into wasn't the church, it was the little place where you go and pray, I guess. And anyway, I can remember going in there and just taking the holy water, me and my friend, and just, like, just deliberately vandalizing the place, and, you know, just throwing the water on the floor because I was mad. Because they were making me feel like, you know, not okay with who I was. Which is not true, but... So all kinds of stuff like that. You know, we went on to, I can remember the first sip of alcohol that I had. And, well, I can remember my first experience with it. My dad used to drink Budweiser, and he know, from time to time, let me have a step off of it. And I can remember that. And I was one of those people that I liked it, like, right away. I liked it right away. And it wasn't just the taste I liked. I mean, it just kind of would explode when it went down my throat. The sensation of it. I don't hold him responsible at all for, you know, my alcoholism. Not at all. I think I first probably got, you know, drunk, stoned, you know, maybe 10, 11 years old, stealing a bottle of wine from my friend Gabby's, you know, dad, and some pot, because he always smoked it, and just drinking that and getting really sick and throwing up and doing it anyway, again. And, you know, so some of those experiences were kind of few and far between for a while. At 12, we moved. My parents decided they're going to sell everything we have in New York and move to Tennessee and to the mountains, Appalachia. So this really takes me home a little bit here, this drive, and learn to live off the land. So that's what we did. And so my parents and all of us four kids, and I'm like 11 at the time, and second to the oldest, and so we, you know, drive up the mountain, and here's our little shack in the mountains, and there's moonshine in the spring house, and there's moonshiners coming up there, you know, with their 22s, because my dad's got long hair, and we all have long hair, my brothers have long hair, and an old, you know, auctioned-off army pickup truck, so anyway, you know, I can remember, you know, just there again, just living in total fear, you know, just and just shame and just, you know, embarrassment, just wanting to hide and that kind of thing. I couldn't understand anything they were saying when we first got there, and they couldn't understand us at all. A lot of Baptist churches just kind of swooped in on us, and, you know, were sort of beating the doors down, trying to, you know, get us to join their church. And I was scared to death. It just really, really scared me. Because in my mind, it made me feel different. You know, I wasn't okay. I wasn't okay because I'm not doing this right. I'm not like everybody else. So I spent, you know, 4 years there. And we learned to live off the land. We did it. We had an outhouse for 4 years. And, I mean, we... My dad's growing marijuana still, and it was a perfect spot. I mean, we were way up some holler, and still giving me sips off of his Budweiser. Today, I find myself kind of wanting to move back toward that experience. I got some really good stuff. I mean, we grew all our own food and canned it. I got to drive a tractor, which was really cool. I learned how to drive really young. You know, and we had lots and lots of animals, in particular a goose that would stick its head up in this hole at the bottom of the outhouse door and would, like, you know, honk at you in this. But, so it was crazy. I mean, anyway, you know, I started to make some friends there, and... You know, when I entered into high school, it was like 35 miles away, maybe 30, 35. It was like an hour on the bus. And I quickly learned that if I missed the bus, you know, on Friday, my parents weren't going to probably come get me. So I'm staying up in Mountain City all weekend and hanging out with people that are older than me and just drinking, like, all weekend, every weekend, until school rolled back around. So You know, even then, I don't ever remember having a social drink in my whole life. I really, really don't. Every time I drank, I was blacking out and not remembering what happened, or I'm falling downstairs. You know, at 15 on the weekends, I'm falling downstairs, riding around on unbelievably windy mountain roads. Just, I can't believe I'm standing here sometimes. You know, I can remember making the cheerleading squad, and we were very bad. We were bad cheerleaders, naughty, very naughty cheerleaders, and getting really, really drunk, you know, before the very first game I've ever cheered my whole entire life. And I was like, just made a complete idiot. I just falling all over the place and not doing any of the right moves or any of this stuff. Anyway, you know, at some point my parents decided to move back to New York. My dad and both my parents are teachers. They, I think, were getting a little, honestly, concerned about my behavior and the education that we were getting. And I didn't want to go, and I told them I wasn't going. And ended up, I didn't go. I stayed in a little town called Sweetwater, Tennessee, which is outside of Knoxville, for an entire summer living in an apartment at 15 with people that were much older than me. And we drank and did drugs every day of that whole summer. So I, you know, was exposed to, you know, everything that I possibly could have been exposed to in that summer. And I can remember going back, you know, the last day of the summer, and taking a bus back to New York to start 11th grade back in New York, and just not wanting to leave. And I can remember not speaking to my, you know, my family for months because I was so angry. So in high school, you know, I'm making a couple of friends, but I'm real disconnected, you know, and, I mean, I can be everybody's friend a little bit, but I, you know, I've got this, you know, I'm getting this wall, you know, ultimately I find a group of people that, you know, parties a lot, and you know, fall in with that crowd, but I'm not really, you know, connected there either, but I'm doing it anyway because it's, something's working there, you know, it's working for me. So that be, you know, my drinking, and, you know, I smoked some pot in high school, and I never really liked it, honestly. Every day on the football field after lunch, going to driver's ed, stone after lunch. And back then you could kind of get away with stuff like that. So, you know, I graduate there and I'm real no real connections there. And I'm okay with moving then from New York to Virginia. I've been here since 78. And so, you know, I applied to VCU and was accepted, and, you know, I hear this, other people talk about this so much, and this is just my experience. I mean, same, there's nothing different. I made it about three semesters, and by the third, I'm maybe down to one class or two. Partying quickly just became a priority for me and took over, and I mean, if it was like class or I just stopped going, and so, you know, at that point I started entering into a really dark a period in my life, which, you know, does involve a lot of usage that wasn't necessarily alcohol. Alcohol is what kind of brought me here, and alcohol is also what took me down. So I, you know, I'm convinced that I am an alcoholic, and I'm going to try to stick to that. Although drugs have been a big part of the solution for me and did work for a while. But so, you know, through my 20s, I'm entering into a very dark period of, just drugs and closed curtains and not eating and drinking and hiding, in closets and not being able to go outside and face people. Somehow that sort of all, it just was a really dark relationship that I was in. And I ended up having a beautiful daughter out of that relationship. And she, she gave me the strength to get sober for a little while. That solution worked for me for a little while. It did. And, I was talking to Michelle on the way up here, and I wish I could say that I've been sober since, 1983 when my first experience with AA in treatment. That's the date that's in the first big book that I have. Michelle really helped me to realize that, that I think that my story does have some depth and weight. I have a gift of having to try this over and over and over and over and over and over again. Before I got sober, I'm not going to get into all the stories, but I hear them all the time. You do too. I'm waking up not knowing where my car is, having to drive around all over Richmond looking for it. In a ditch. I have no idea where it is, and sometimes I find it and sometimes I don't. Wrecking cars. I had one DUI in 1980 and my only one just because I was really lucky. Ran into a smashed, I ran into a brand new, parked rental car. And on some dead end street, woke up in jail. And I can remember going to court over that and the judge looking at me and saying, young lady, you're an alcoholic. And I said, no, I'm not. And I really didn't know I was. I was. I mean, my blood alcohol was 0.29 when I got that DUI. It was the highest in the ASAP class. I'm not proud of that. I'm just trying to say, at 20 years old, I'm able to drink, almost point whatever. And I'm really not. And so just crazy stuff. I pulled myself one time because I had done like a handful of pain medication and I was drinking beer all night. And there's a police car pulled over here and I'm so messed up. I just pull up right behind him. And back then you used to be able to get off stuff like that sometimes. And it's not so much like that, I don't think, anymore. But just, crazy car stuff, crazy, waking up with my thumb like off my finger because I'd been in a bar the night before, slam dancing, and somebody ran and I, flew through the air and, I'm waking up and blood's covering the sheets and everything and just really, really insane stuff like that. Anyway, in 80, after my daughter was born, I started drinking. I was drinking about a 6-pack a night on the way home from work, and I can remember one night it was my birthday, I'm going out, I had stolen a bunch of tranquilizers out of somebody's purse at work, and I was, drinking beer, and I'm going out to celebrate my birthday by myself in the pouring rain. And so I'm driving, and I don't know, something just came over me, and I just turned the car back around and the next morning and got up and went to a meeting. That started that was the beginning of a period of 11 years of not drinking for me. I skirted around AA for the first three and was very much into the fellowship aspect of AA. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't work the steps. I didn't have a home group. I didn't think that I needed all of that stuff. So, I really, you know, felt like I had the information that you guys had given me. I got this. So I'm going to go to school and I'm going to major in rehab services now that I don't drink anymore so I can go help everybody. So that's what I did. And started going to counseling somewhere in that 11-year period for about 4 or 5 years. And she kept telling me at the end, I mean, counseling every week, why don't you go to AA? Why don't you go to AA? And I just, for some reason, just, like, refused. I mean, I would go, but, like, only maybe to pick up my yearly chip or if I felt like it. Okay. So 15 years ago, I meet my husband, and he's my new solution. He's perfect. He's drunk when I meet him, and, you know, I'm going to fix him. And he's got to stop, because I'm not going to marry you if you don't. And so he did, and we didn't for 4 years, five maybe, until that didn't work anymore either. It didn't work. It wasn't enough. And I can remember making a decision to drink after 11 years, and what a decision that was. And I can remember telling my husband what was going to happen. And that's exactly what happened. I told him it was going to be probably a month before I did it again, and then I was going to do it every 2 weeks, and then every week, and then I was going to be doing it, you know, all week. And I mean, all of that played out for me. It was like I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew that, and I've known that for a really long time, but I just... I didn't get the whole powerlessness thing. I didn't get that, and it's taken me, you know, nothing like a good experience to know something in here. And that's what it took for me. So, but it was such a relief when I made that decision to, to drink, because I'd crossed the line. I was like, okay, now I can drink. The decision was really kind of the hardest part, but I didn't have a choice. It was like I didn't have a choice. And I, you know, it all kind of played out like that, and then it just was, you know, before you know it, you know, I'm drinking every day again. So I guess since about 2002, that was when I, you know, first visited AA again after that 11-year period. And I got a sponsor in 2002. That sponsor is actually, later on you'll hear more about her, but she actually ended up, you know, coming to me, you know, and saving my life at the end. But so I started going through the steps with her. I still didn't get a home group, but I had a sponsor. I'm getting there a little bit, maybe. And had, you know, even done a fourth step. But looking back on that, that fourth step really, it came from in my head. It came from in my head. It didn't come from here. And so I knew it in my head, you know, all these things on paper, but I didn't have it in here, which is where I needed to get this. So we just sort of started after 2 years drifting apart, and I carried that fourth step around in my briefcase for a couple of years, and shredded it one day at work, and a week later I was drinking, and 9 days later I'm like in full blown alcohol withdrawals, you know, trying to do this at my parents' house, bless their hearts. I was very sick. I I have had to learn about the progression of this disease. And it is very real. It is very real. I'd always heard about it. But I am really stubborn. And I have needed to have every experience that I had in order to concede to my innermost self. And so that wasn't the end, you know. So I'm at my parents', you know, seeing black bugs and sweating and you know, just grinding brain and not sleeping. And you know, went home after that, and it was about a week and a half after that. I'm alone, and I'm on family medical leave from work because they know something's wrong with me. They really know something's wrong with me. And they know what it is too. We just don't talk about it. And I'm painting the bathroom, and I'm by myself, and I haven't slept, and I haven't eaten. And I go to the refrigerator to get something to drink, and I decide to look in the freezer, and there's a bottle of, you know, liquor in there, and that was all she wrote. I can remember, you know, self-willing it for a little while, maybe half an hour. It drove me crazy. I'm going back and forth to the refrigerator, just opening it and looking at it, and I'm obsessed until I can't do it anymore. Maybe it was 15 minutes, and then again, I take the drink, I cross the line. Whew. Gosh, you know, I feel better, you know. And it wasn't too long after that, maybe another week, I'm in treatment. And so it was a good experience. I learned a lot of stuff. Got out of there, you know, went to some meetings. Let me back up a little bit. I want to say the last 2 years of my drinking, which ended in 2007, I drank like four times, and it might have been five, it's hard to remember, but every time I drank, I ended up in the hospital. I had to be locked up, I had to be physically removed from alcohol. So, you know, at one point, you know, my son is home alone with me. I can't remember why. I think maybe because there was ice outside because he found me in the ice, unconscious. And, you know, I feel the need to share that because it's just really powerful. It's just a message about powerlessness, I guess. But he had to call for help, you know, and my blood alcohol was 0.5. I woke up hours and hours and hours and hours later in the hospital. And, you know, the doctor told me I shouldn't be alive. And he said that he would be dead, and he was twice my size. So I guess what I want to say is I got out of there, and I was so determined because of the shame and humiliation of, you know, what I had done, that I wasn't going to do that again. You know, I wasn't going to drink again. And I didn't for 6 months. And then I didn't have a solution, so I didn't have any other choice but to drink. So I got that out of the way, and hopefully I won't cry again. And that's something that I think I'm just, some of the stuff I'm just going to have to live with, I think. That's a sad story. My son is almost 13 now, and he knows a lot about this disease. So I get out of treatment, and I think I'm doing pretty good. I need to sort of get moving. And, you know, had, you know, gotten all this information and treatment, and so I went to a few meetings and, you know, got through, it was right around the holidays, I got through Thanksgiving, got through Christmas, got through all the parties, got through New Year's, and, you know, about, well, my sobriety date is January 29th, about midway through January, I'm deciding I'm going to celebrate because I did this, see? I did this. And so, you know, and that's the end of the story, really. I drank, and within a very short period of time, I, you know, went to depths that I have never visited before, and really came to realize that alcohol was my master. I could not be awake and not have alcohol in my body. And if it wasn't sitting there, I'm going to any lengths to get it. I'm going to break in my neighbor's house because he has a full liquor cabinet. I have the key. I say break in because he's not letting me in. I have the key because I feed his pets when he's out of town. And that doesn't give me permission to walk into his house at 3 o'clock in the morning and steal his vodka either. You know, or I'm going to Walmart and I'm, you know, stores are closed, you know, and I'm going to steal it, you know. I got to have it. I've got to have it. It's just like the air I breathe. And, you know, my existence the last, you know, few days before I got back here was literally crawling back and forth on the floor to the bathroom, waking up in all kinds of excrement, and my goal was I can't say that I wanted to die, but I could not be awake and face, you know, what I had done. My goal was to just stay asleep, stay unconscious. Something happened. You know, by then I'm out of work again. I mean, I still have the same job. I happen to work with people in mental health, so I guess they have some compassion, you know, and but I can't work. I can't function. I can't go out of the house. I can't write a check because I'm shaking too bad. My husband has to get it for me. I cannot steady my pen. I can't talk because my tongue is like just numb. I don't know what it's called, but it's something medical. But I couldn't talk. I couldn't talk. I, you know, found myself looking at myself in the mirror and just was completely, I just was unrecognizable to myself. I there was nothing. I was gone. And I knew I was going to die. I knew I was going to die because there was nowhere else to go. I mean, alcohol wasn't working for me, but I still had to have it anyway, and that's the allergy. I had to have it. Wasn't working. I'm going to die. I, you know, find an old where and when, and I start calling people, just randomly calling people out of there, and I'm crying, and I can't get anybody. I can't get anybody on the phone. So I'm leaving messages and just find my way out to the back porch, and I can remember just sitting and just putting my head in my hands, and I knew I was going to die, and I just said, please God help me. That was what I said, and I think at that time I was open, you know. I asked for help, and I'll get it back together here. Hang on. And and an angel was sent to me. I don't know. Some of you probably know Debbie Sangster, but she called me. And I didn't call her. She was not one of the people I'd called. She was not one of the people I called. I hadn't talked to her in over 5 years, and she just called to see how I was doing. If she had called the week before that, perhaps it wasn't the right time. I wasn't open. I'm not, I'm not sure what your beliefs are, but it's, it's no coincidence that the time was right. So she and her husband came and took me into detox. I was really sick. I didn't sleep, the whole week, and my body clock was so messed up, and it was really hard. My ego was right back the next morning. There weren't any other alcoholics in there. Just, there were some people with depression, and then about 3 days in, this young kid rode his bike up from VCU, and he was that desperate, and he was like 19 or 20, and throwing up blood already. His disease had progressed to where he was really sick, and I can remember just being so relieved when he got there, just, having somebody that I could identify with. And thank God for the AA meetings that came up in there. While I was in treatment, because that was really, I was hopeless, and I really thought I had done permanent physical damage, and I probably have. I don't remember stuff. I don't know if it's because I'm getting old, or if, I just don't know. It doesn't matter. It is what it is. But anyway, I can remember, I had at that point a couple of days alcohol-free, and this kid came up, and it gave me something to think about outside of myself, and it was just, it was already happening, so I got out of there and, went to Jay Walker's. I was real sick. I didn't pick my sponsor. I didn't, I hear people didn't pick a sponsor. I didn't. Some older guy just came over, and I think he just recognized that I couldn't make any decisions for myself. I had tried everything. I didn't tell you this, but I tried getting on Survivor to stay sober. I did. I have a video and everything. I was very serious about it because I put me on an island or wherever it is for 45 days, I can stop drinking. I watch that every now and then. It's pretty funny. I've got a rabbit by the ears, but anyway. So I had tried everything, and from counseling to fear kept me sober. Exercise, water. I was able to manage my alcoholism for long periods of time, and taking vitamins and drinking water. I have lots of periods in my life where I wasn't drinking. But, I didn't get it, I didn't get it. Anyway, this guy comes over, and he says, "You need her." And I was like, "Oh, my God, anybody but her, please, anybody but her." I knew who she was. And I didn't want any parts of that. But I had no fight left in me. I just didn't. I couldn't fight. I didn't have any fight left in me. And she looked at me and she said, "You're a chronic relapser." And I was like, my first impulse was to say, "No, I'm not." Just like I said to the judge, "No, I'm not." But she was right. She was right. We started meeting on Sundays and going through the book, and that was just an amazing experience for me. Nobody ever said, I couldn't read that book. when I first got here. Don't tell me to go read some book because I can't read the book. I can't sleep. I don't sleep for 30 days. I go back to work. I have to have one of you guys talk me all the way into the door because I'm so ashamed. I can't, you know, I'm 2 weeks into going back to work and I'm driving and I'm so tired. I'm so tired. And I remember calling my sponsor and just saying, I can't go on. I'm just so tired. I can't. And she said, here's a really simple prayer. God help me. I can't carry myself. Please carry me. And, you know, suddenly I just got this is so real. This is so true for me. I just got this energy that I didn't have before and I was able to get through the day. And, so little by little, you know, I got a little bit better and a little bit better physically, a little bit. It took a long time for the sleep to come back, but I got home group, and I got to tell you, I've fought this thing, you know, all the way. I just, in the past, always felt like I had to understand why I was being asked to do these things, why I had to do the steps, why do I have to have a home group, why do I need a sponsor? What's been different this time? I'm having a whole new experience with AA. I have learned that, you know, when I take the action, that's when the understanding comes. And it took me, you know, getting really, really sick in order to be willing, you know, to follow directions. I can remember meeting with her, and I can remember her asking me, what was the craziest thing you ever did? And I was like, oh my God, I drank. And, I mean, that was the answer that she was looking for. I really got how insane, you know, I had tried self-knowledge, you know, I had self-willed it, and, you know, fear kept me sober for, you know, months and months, but when I pick up a drink, I can't stop, and for me today, for me to, a decision to drink, I believe is a decision, a suicidal decision for me at this point. I do. So anyway, she, you know, started taking me through the steps, and I've been very slow to get this. I just celebrated 3 years. Been just very slow. She's been incredibly patient with me, although it doesn't always feel like that. I guess she had to do a lot of praying about it. I don't know. I can remember about 2 months into my sobriety and, you know, getting this to step two, just driving in my car to work, the same job, you know, where everybody knew. I'm driving to work and I've been sober for like 2 months, and I was just overwhelmed with this sensation that I'm driving to work. I'm driving my car. I am participating, you know, in life. It just was like, my God, this is not, you know, a natural state for me. And it was only because of doing what you guys told me to do, showing up, doing things whether I wanted to or not, whether I felt like it or not. I can remember, this may sound really cheesy, but about four or five months into my sobriety, I took a trip out to Boulder to visit my sister, and which I would never do before because I can't leave my husband alone because he's going to misbehave, but I do it anyway. I go myself to visit my sister. And something happened. I mean, I wasn't paralyzed with, I was not paralyzed with fear. I was able to go on an airplane and go visit my sister. I want to get well, and this is what I need to do. And I can remember climbing up you know, to Bear Lake, it's like, I don't know, it's like a really 10,000 feet up, I think. And I had, I mean, it was there that I think I really, I made a decision, you know. Something goes on up there. It's God's country. It really is. It was for me. It was just unbelievable. And I really got how insignificant I was in the scheme of things. So, you know, I don't know that I have time to talk about all the steps, but it's been an amazing journey. I've learned so much over the last couple of years, and I, you know, Michelle has just been an amazing person in my life, and I have, you know, without getting into an Al-Anon talk, I've been able to stay sober and live, you know, live with active alcoholism, you know, for the past, you know, year and a half, and not have, you know, through it all, not have a desire to drink. It's been a really amazing mirror for me, and it's also been an experience that I needed to have, you know, to learn to take responsibility for my life, and that's what it all boils down to. I'm responsible, you know. What a gift, you know. The women in this program have helped me a lot. The men in this program have given me a lot of hope as well. My relationships with women have gotten so much better. Although that's still, it's just still something that is there and that I need to act on, you know. Getting a little bit better, a little bit better. I'm finding that, you know, through pain, I generally learn something and I'm not inclined to let go of things easily. I saw an expression, anything I have ever had to let go of had claw marks. That's when it's been like for me, but I've, you know, learning to walk through pain and finding that, you know, that it's not always like that. I don't pay quite so much attention to my feelings as I used to, and that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. I don't know what else to talk about, you know, I need you guys. When I start trying to, and I still think, you know, sometimes that thought comes, I don't need to do this anymore, you know. And I'm happy to know that that's normal too in AA, and that I hear a lot of people talk about that. But I need you guys to remind me that's sick thinking. You know, my mind is going to tell me a lot of things, and I need you guys to bring me back to here, from here to here. I really do. I'm happy to say that, you know, I'm able to recognize my own behavior a little bit more, and am able to get from here, you know, to here, you know. Or I know that I'm going to, you know, when I'm going through it. It takes me sometimes a little while, but trust in the process, and I don't have to put anything into my body today. I don't have to drink. I don't have to take pills. I don't have to smoke cigarettes. And you know, I still really like chocolate and ice cream, but I don't know. I think I've still fallen a little short. I wish I could spend more time talking about sobriety, but it is getting to be that, you know, close to 7, and I think that's, I'm just really want to continue to grow in this program, for me, it's, you know, it's a choice to live or die, really. It really is. That's the bottom line, and I want to stick around. So thank you very much.